Good evening. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz, and welcome to Health Matters. This evening, we'll be talking with Dr. G.E. Ghali, Interim Chancellor of LSU Health in Shreveport. We will discuss the programs offered at the LSU Health School of Medicine and School of Allied Health, as well as the School of Graduate Studies. And we'll also discuss some of the current challenges and opportunities in healthcare delivery and education in our region. Dr. Ghali is also, in addition to being the interim chancellor at LSU Health in Shreveport, he's also the professor and chairman of the Department of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery at LSU Health. Dr. Ghali, welcome to Health Matters.
Good evening, Dr. Katz. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure to have you. I want to just note that Health Matters is a very lively weekly show here on Red River Radio, where we invite you, our listeners, to join in our discussion. And this evening, we're going to be covering a lot of topics, but we will have opportunity to take your questions and comments. You're welcome to call in at 1-800-552-8502 or via Twitter at RRR Public Radio. Well, Dr. Ghali, you're obviously wearing lots of hats. In addition to being the interim chancellor, you're also the dean, I understand, as well as the professor of oromaxillofacial surgery. Can you, for our listeners, first give a little introduction about your educational and professional background?
Yes, I can. Again, thanks for having me, Sandy. And my hometown is Dallas, but I've been here in Shreveport for about a quarter of a century now. I went to elementary school and high school, grade school, and college in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then first went to dental school at Baylor, and then medical school right here in Shreveport, and then trained at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, and then did a fellowship in Portland, Oregon in head and neck surgery, and I've been back in Shreveport full-time since about 1995.
So prior to becoming the interim chancellor, you are and have been professor and chairman of the Department of Oromaxillofacial Surgery. What exactly is oromaxillofacial surgery?
Well, it's a rather complex specialty that has roots both in dentistry and in medicine. And it really involves treating and managing diseases, disorders, injuries, of the face, jaws, and neck region.
Okay, so you have a lot of clinical experience, and then as professor, I imagine a lot of administrative experience, and then you also have a residency, so educational experience and training experience.
That's correct. Our particular department, our specific department, has a residency program that is 6 years in length that combines both their prior training from dental school, additional training in medical school at LSU, and followed by a residency, so total of about 6 years. And we have four residents a year in that program. And then we, in addition to that, have two fellowship programs, which has two fellows each in it, one in head and neck microvascular surgery and one in craniofacial and cleft surgery, like children with cleft lip and palate disorders and things like that.
Fantastic. So how long have you been at LSU?
I've been at LSU full-time since 1995.
Okay. And when did you become chancellor and dean?
President Alexander of LSU appointed me in that position 1st of February 2016.
Okay. So tell our listeners a little bit about what exactly the chancellor does.
Oh, boy. Well, it's been quite a steep learning curve for me. The chancellor is basically the individual that is the chief executive officer of the Health Sciences Center, and that includes the in our particular instance the School of Medicine, the School of Allied Health, as well as the School of Graduate Studies. So basically my job is to sort of manage the entire Health Science Center.
I see. And how about your role as dean?
The role as dean is sort of been combined. The dean and chancellor position, at least for the time being, has been a combined position. And that position oversees specifically the School of Medicine. And don't get me wrong, Sandy, I've got lots of people helping me in these positions, particularly within the School of Medicine as a dean. I have multiple vice chancellors and associate deans that are quite instrumental in allowing me a better understanding of what's going on at the School of Medicine and implementing some of the ideas and visions that I have. And fortunately for me and for the community, many of these individuals have been in place for many years and have quite a bit of experience in their various disciplines.
I see. So what is the difference between the LSU School of Medicine, or as you said, the Health Sciences Center, and university health? Because right. we see the medicine part, we see university health, and I think it may be hard for many people to understand what the difference is.
Right. So historically, as you know, as of October 2013, the Health Sciences Center, which you may want to include the hospital as part of it, but up until October 2013, when someone said Health Sciences Center, that also included the University Hospital, which, you know, before that it was LSU Health Science Center, and before that it was Confederate Memorial and LSU Medical Center. And we can talk more about the history of that. But basically, when the privatization occurred in October of 2013, a private entity then took over the management of the hospital. So the hospital is, although it's connected and it's on the same campus and it's still owned by the state, it's basically being run or managed by a separate private entity. So therefore, the public-private relationship, the public relationship is the LSU component in the state, and the private is the, in this case, the Biomedical Research Foundation.
I see. So the management and the operational activities of the hospital is run by a private organization, but as chancellor, you oversee the medical school, the School of Allied Health, the graduate programs, and not the hospital.
Correct. We don't oversee the hospital or the employees of the hospital. We do oversee the physicians that work in the hospital, as well as the residents and fellows that work under the direction of those physicians.
Okay.
Those are all full-time faculty members of the School of Medicine.
I see. So let's focus on some of the aspects of the educational programs. So you mentioned the graduate programs, the School of Allied Health, and the medical school. Let's focus for just a moment on these other two entities that people may be less familiar with: the School of Allied Health and the graduate school. Can you say a little bit about those?
Sure. The School of Allied Health and the Graduate School are really integral components of our Health Sciences Center. If you look at the School of Allied Health, Joe McCullough is the dean of that school, and that school has basically programs in the area of clinical sciences, in the area of rehabilitation sciences, in the area of public health. And also there's significant collaboration between our School of Allied Health and LSUS, for example, in the area of public health and getting a master's in public health and things like that. If you look at our clinical sciences within the School of Allied Health, there's opportunities for individuals to get training in the areas of cardiopulmonary science, the area of clinical laboratory science, being a physician assistant, a PA, in the rehabilitation sciences, things such as occupational therapy, OT, physical therapy, PT, and of course, we have a very robust program at the Molly Webb Speech Hearing Center in the area of speech-language pathology, which is very critical, not just to our cleft lip and palate patients that we treat, but also sure. rehabilitation of patients for the ENT service when it comes to voice and things like that, rehabilitation of patients that have laryngectomies, and the management of individuals with audiologic problems, hearing problems, the need for cochlear implants, and things like that. So we have a very robust program within the School of Allied Health in these areas. And I can add, Sandy, that these are high-demand jobs. None of these folks, none of these young ladies and men that graduate from these programs have a problem finding a job. I mean, it is high demand in Louisiana, particularly.
I've heard that. Yes. They have very high placement as far as jobs.
They do.
It's which in this economy is really important.
Right. And it's a very competitive program, but many of our graduates, most of our graduates stay in Louisiana and contribute to the economy of our great state. You mentioned the graduate school also. In our graduate school is under the direction of Sandy Rorick, who is our dean of the graduate school. And she's very involved in all the programs. We have both master's degree programs as well as PhD programs, doctorate degree programs in biochemistry, molecular biology, in cell biology and anatomy, microbiology and immunology, pharmacology, toxicology, molecular and cellular physiology. And we also, along with the graduate school, offer an MD-PhD program for those physician scientists that wish to get a combined medical and PhD degree.
Fantastic. Now, what about the Children's Center? Is that over at Allied Health as well?
Children's Center.
Yeah, I understand that there's an autism department in terms of for evaluations and things of that sort.
Right.
A multidisciplinary program for autism.
Right, there is. And that's currently under further development as well.
Fantastic. And now let's talk a little bit about the medical school. How old is the medical school and how many students does it have? Say a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, the history of our of healthcare in northern Louisiana is really super interesting. I mean, it just really is. And people think, well, how far back does it date and things like that. But I will tell you that the Health Science Center in Shreveport has a super interesting history. And really, if I know you were asking specifically about the medical school, but since the hospital and medical school have been tied for many, many years, can I just talk
yes,
about
please.
The hospital for just a second?
Oh,
first,
absolutely.
Obviously privatized in 2013, but let's go back to the inception of it when it was much more directly associated with the medical school and even before the existence of the medical school. Because the medical school really as a concept came about in the 1950s, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the hospital itself is really super interesting. And it takes its origins back to around 1869 when the legislature passed Act 149 to establish the Charity Hospital of the City of Shreveport. With a bond issue of $100,000, which was a significant amount of money in 1869. I mean, I think it's significant right now, but
sure.
If anyone wants to give me $100,000, I'll take it right now as the chancellor and put it toward good use at our Health Sciences Center. But that was a tremendous amount of money that the city put up in 1869. And the hospital was initially established for the following reason. The hospital was to provide care, quote, to provide care for the impoverished Confederate veterans and the recently freed slaves. That was in 1869. In 1876, the legislature then passed Act 40 to once again establish a Shreveport Charity Hospital. It didn't go through initially in 1869. And then in 1876, they went ahead and had this Act 40 to once again establish a charity hospital. The hospital then began at that time and was located at Pierre Avenue and Ford Street. And it was really at that point that things started to develop. In 1946, a constitutional amendment that authorized the issuance of bonds to be secured by surpluses from the Confederate Veterans Pension Fund tax was approved. And the new hospital even received a new name. Finally, in 1949, it received the name Confederate Memorial Medical Center, derived because of the major source of its funding coming from those funds and from those taxes. In 1953, the hospital was dedicated to the memory of the Confederate soldiers of the Civil War and was financed in part through the issuance of bonds secured by surpluses from the Confederate Veterans and Widows Pension Fund, as I had mentioned. It's interesting to note that the dedication took place on Confederate Memorial Day. And that's sort of the history of it. The interesting thing, in 1965, then-Governor McKeithen signed an act to establish the School of Medicine and the School of Graduate Studies. But this didn't come easily, Sandy, and it took a tremendous amount of effort by the Shreveport Medical Society. The Shreveport Medical Society demanded a institution of higher learning to train physicians in this area. Before that, most of the physicians came from Tulane or from Loyola, New Orleans region. And so they were able to, through the support of the Shreveport Medical Society and the legislative support that they got from that. In 1969, the first 32 students began classes, initially at the Veterans Administration Hospital, and then ultimately funding was secured in 1970, and the school then received full accreditation and conferred its first medical degrees in 1973.
Are there any people still practicing who were the part of that original class?
Oh, yeah, they sure are. As a matter of fact, they just had a reunion recently.
Wow, that's fantastic.
They did. So that's kind of gives you the background of when it first started. They first took classes in 1969. They first graduated in 1973. So when you look at from a medical school standpoint, it's a very new medical school. It's 40 years old. It's not 400 years old like Harvard.
Sure.
So, you know.
How many physicians do you think have been trained at that medical school over the years, if you had to just guess?
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say 3,974.
And what percentage? That's very close. No, I have the statistic. Kidding. And this particular medical school is relatively unique. And my understanding is that the vast majority of the graduates remain in the region, in the state, to deliver clinical services. Is that true?
You're absolutely correct. But in that statement, I'll tell you, we've had, as of August of 2016, we've had a total of 7,521 alumni from all three schools, from the graduate school, the School of Medicine, and the School of Allied Health. So a little under 4,000 from the School of Medicine, a little over 3,000 from the School of Allied Health, and about 450 from the School of Graduate Studies. We have individuals practicing in Louisiana. I guess your question could be like, what population is served by our graduates?
Yeah.
So essentially nearly every physician in northern Louisiana trained at our health sciences center, both in the northeast and in the northwest from Alexandria northward. But of the 64 parishes in Louisiana, we have graduates in 62 of the 64 parishes practicing medicine. And so, you know, we're very, very proud of that.
So it's really had a major impact upon healthcare delivery in the state, and particularly in the region. I've heard some discussion, given our current economic situation in the state with the debt and whatnot. There was some discussion of what would be the impact of consolidating the medical education into one state school down south. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, fortunately, Larry Olier and I are very, very close friends. My counterpart, the chancellor at LSU, New Orleans School of Medicine. And, you know, we've sort of discussed this topic, and it would be a difficult thing to pull off just by the sheer number of students that it would be. I mean, they don't really have the capacity to be able to do that down in New Orleans, and we don't have the capacity to be able to do that up here in Shreveport. And although ideally it sounds like a good idea to sort of consolidate into one school, I think demographically, one of the things you have to look at is to train a class. If you were to combine all that and have a class of 300 students.
So how many students are present or in each class here?
Sandy, this year we just started a class this past week of, I believe the exact number is 126 or 127, something like that. Now we've grown quite a bit from when I was in medical school. We had 100, and now we're up to mid 120s, and we should top out somewhere around 150 per class. But if we were to combine the two classes and have 300 students, that's a lot of students you need material to train those students on. You need patients. You need disease processes for them to see. Fortunate for these students and for our Health Sciences Center, our population up here, the rural population, they're really very fortunate because they're able to see a lot of different medical conditions that would be hard to be seen in just one small concentrated area, say like New Orleans, for example.
Yeah. I want to remind our listeners that that you are free to call in a question. Dr. Ghali is here available to ask questions about the medical school, School of Allied Health, the graduate program, or even questions about his opinion about medical education in general. And that number again is 1-800-552-8502. So, Dr. Ghali, with all those students and all the support staff and all the professors and all the doctors, what kind of an economic impact does this school have in our region?
Right. Well, the economic impact is tremendous, as you can imagine. There's about nearly a $700 million total economic impact across North Louisiana, Sandy. So about $550 million direct economic impact in the Shreveport region, and an additional $175 million economic impact in the Monroe area with our E.A. Conway Hospital there and the programs that we have there and the residents and the faculty that are faculty members of our Health Sciences Center and our School of Medicine. So really it's nearly a $700 million total economic impact across northern Louisiana. But the interesting thing, again, to remember, 70% of active Louisiana physicians are trained at LSU. And I mentioned also that our allied health graduates really are in high demand and have 100% job placement at or within 6 months of graduation. One of the interesting things to remember is that there's a secondary effect to the economic impact. So in addition to the direct $700 million economic impact of our LSU Health Science Center, our alumni provide $2.4 billion of economic impact in North Louisiana each year and support over 12,000 jobs in the region. For example, each office-based physician, I think you and I may have discussed this in the past, but each office-based physician has an annual economic impact of about $2 million.
Wow. That's a big number.
That's big numbers, and we need it here.
Yeah, we sure do. So, I mean, between the educational programs and the training as well as the economic impact, the consolidation sounds like a very bad idea.
Well, it would be a bad idea for our area.
Both
financially and also educationally for the trainees.
Yeah. We have our first caller on the phone. Let's bring him into the conversation. Thomas from Shreveport, welcome to Health Matters.
Hey, Dr. Golly, Thomas Carmody. I just first and foremost wanted to say that I think you're in the right spot, and we're glad to have you. I did have a quick question for you, and I hope it's not anything that's kind of over everybody's head, but if you were going to start a medical school and have an associated hospital, would you not have the faculty tied to have their practice within the walls of that facility?
Thomas, we're having a hard time hearing you. It sounds like you have a bad connection on your
cell. All right, sir. I'm sorry.
That's better.
Very quickly, the medical school, if you were going to have an associated hospital with the medical school you created, you would have it such that the faculty physicians would practice within the walls of the hospital that was there with it. And I think many of us realize that what we've got is a situation where the faculty here in Shreveport and in Conway really kind of had the best of both worlds. They received their compensation for teaching, which is what they were getting paid to do, but they also had the ability to apply their practice outside and get a greater return on their time, which no one can blame. Right?
So did you, what's your question, Thomas?
Is it difficult as our chancellor to negotiate the faculty salary and the contract for your physicians and then make sure they get paid?
Gotcha. Okay, so I guess Thomas's question is related to your position as chancellor, negotiating on behalf of your clinical faculty, and I guess that kind of in the current environment. And I guess that also speaks to some of the challenges in our current economic environment that you might have, let's say, recruiting and retaining physicians and adequately compensating them.
Right.
What's your thoughts on that,
right.
Dr.
So,
Gilly?
Thomas, can you hear me? You there, Thomas? Or is he off?
Thomas, yeah. You still there?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay.
I see you fine.
Great. Thanks for your question. Yeah, certainly we're in a position to negotiate contracts for the physicians. As a matter of fact, I've got two individuals that work with me that specifically that's their job, is to try to optimize any contractual negotiations for the services of our physicians with the University Hospital, both in Shreveport and in Conway, as well as with any other hospitals that we choose to be able to work with. I think that the most critical factor in any kind of negotiation, I mean, obviously we want to get the most amount of money for these particular physicians and surgeons, because we want to keep them.
Coming to Shreveport, I want them to make a livelihood.
That's right. We want them to make a livelihood, and we want them to stay here. We want to attract the best and the brightest people here. Yes, we are certainly in the process of negotiating these contracts to the best of our ability.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Thomas. So, Dr. Golly, I guess this would be, with Thomas's question, I guess this would be a good follow-up, and that is, you mentioned indigent care. You mentioned, charitable care. How exactly do physicians at the medical school get paid for their clinical services, particularly when we're talking about patients who might be uninsured?
Right. So historically, prior to the privatization, the LSU Health Science Center, Shreveport Hospital, and the physicians have historically provided care to patients regardless of their insurance status through a free care policy that has been existent within the charity system and truly is what the charity system was established for. As part of the corporate endeavor agreement, University Health Shreveport and Conway graciously adopted the same free care policies that were in place when LSU managed these hospitals. And the LSU Shreveport physicians continue to provide health care to University Health Shreveport and to Monroe patients, regardless of their ability to pay. Now, there are programs that are available through the DHH, the Department of Health and Human Services, and through CMS, and through other governmental agencies that provide monies to the university hospital or many public hospitals, all public hospitals, in order to compensate them to offset expenses in taking care of the indigent population. So that's part of the formula that's used. So part of those monies go to support of the hospital and to support the hospital staff and the employees that are working there. And another portion of that money comes to the School of Medicine to support the salary of the doctors, because again, the amount of salary that these folks are paid is not covered by any stretch of the imagination by anything that we would get through indigent care compensation plans.
All right, we have a another caller. We have John, who is driving. So let's see if we can get a good contact from him. John.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. Welcome to Health Matters. What's your question for Dr. Ghali?
Hi, Dr. Ghali. I'm a registered nurse, and as a child growing up in Shreveport, University Health or LSU Health and Science Center was known as Confederate Memorial Hospital, and then it was Charity Hospital. Having worked in California, I see hospitals like University of UC Davis and other university hospitals throughout the United States are like want-to-go places. You know, if you have a disease, if you have a problem, that they're people want to go there, where I don't get that same feeling, that same concept here with University Health. You know, like I said, growing up as a child, you either went to Willis-Knighton or you went to the Christus facility or Shumpert, and, you know, only the poor folk went to LSU. But, you know, that's where the best and the brightest are right now. And you have doctors looking over student doctors, so everything is checked, double-checked, to make sure that everything is right. And money, research money is poured into there to, you know, advance health care. But my concern is, how do you change that concept, I guess, of it being the charity hospital, the PoFolk hospital, to one of a leading medical center? I'll hang up and listen to your answer, sir.
Thank you very much for your call and question, John.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
John, thank you very much. What you've said is absolutely correct. You know, the short answer is yes. You're right. Historically, what you're saying is accurate. You know, by the same token, in the 25 or so years that I've been here, I've heard similar things to when I was in Dallas. You know, it was really no different. I mean, when I was a kid in Dallas growing up, you know, you didn't go to Parkland Hospital. You know, you knew about Parkland Hospital. It's where Kennedy was taken when he was assassinated in a futile attempt to get him resuscitated. And it was known as a trauma center. It was known where, boy, if I get shot, that's where I want to be taken. If I get in a bad car accident, that's where I want to be taken.
And which is also the case at LSU as the trauma center.
Correct, Sandy, which is also the case here. And in the 25 years I've been here, John, I hear similar things. If I get shot, boy, I want to go to LSU. If I get in a bad car accident, I want to go to LSU because that's where we have the trauma surgeons, the level one trauma center, and everything else. The second part of your question is sort of the difficult part of your question. The short answer is, how do we make it to where everyone wants to go there? Well, I don't know that it'll ever be that way where everyone wants to go there, if anyone wants to go into a hospital anyway, but it's going to take money. It's going to take money. It's going to take the community and the state and us investing in the infrastructure of that hospital to make it, to improve it to where it's as nice as any other hospital in the community. And that would be a goal for anyone. So you're absolutely right. And you make some good points.
Now, Dr. Ghaly, though, with the private-public partnerships between the private hospitals here in town, or even the VA for that matter, with the medical school, it seems as though that many of those physicians at the medical school, and even the residents and the fellows, also practice and train in the community hospitals as well. And so is it correct that oftentimes you can go to the private hospitals and also get care from those same physicians and faculty members who also practice at the university hospital?
Oh, absolutely correct. And I think it's important in, as John says, I mean, the if you look at the LSU hospital as a whole, the average patient is not going to go to get their appendix taken out unless it's an emergency gangrenous sort of peritonitis. The average patient, would go into just a typical emergency room. But, again, level one trauma center, things like this, that's what's going to be taken care of there. Certainly, many of the faculty members at the School of Medicine are also work at the hospitals around the community, whether they be Willis-Knighton, whether they be at Christus, whether they be at the VA hospital, Rapides, et cetera. Also, there are many physicians in the community who are primarily attached to one of the private hospitals, as Sandy says, that are actually on a faculty at the School of Medicine. And not only do they teach and they give lectures to the residents and the students, but then they also operate and provide services at the university hospital as well. So that's a collegial relationship that we need to try to grow more in the future as well.
Well, we've kind of made a segue into the trauma center being the only level one trauma center in the area. Can you take this opportunity to kind of brag about some of the other programs and departments at the school?
Sure. It's kind of interesting. We have five basic science departments. Those are the departments that I mentioned earlier that you can do graduate studies and get a PhD in, the biochemistry, the physiology, the pharmacology, the microbiology. But in addition to those basic science departments, which are very heavily involved, not just in research, but also in the education of the students during their first 2 years of medical school, in addition to that, we have 17-plus clinical departments that are heavily involved in the clinical work at the hospital, everything from taking care of the trauma patients and everything else to providing the clinical component or the last 2 years of a medical student's education. So we have 17 clinical departments. The interesting thing is only about six of those 17 clinical departments are absolutely necessary by the accreditation standards to have an accredited medical school. So you say, well, gosh, can't you get rid of the other 11 clinical departments? Won't that save you money? Well, it's interesting because those additional departments are things like my own department, oral and maxillofacial surgery, or ear, nose, and throat, or ophthalmology, or radiology, or anesthesia. Many of these departments that, because as a society and as a community, we've mandated, boy, we want Shreveport-Bossier needs a level one trauma center. It needs an academic medical center. It needs smart people in the community to take care of our medical problems and to think about how to fix these problems. Well, only six departments are absolutely necessary, but because of the needs of our community and of our citizens in North Louisiana, got together and they said, we want an academic medical center. And then academic medical center has these additional disciplines available to comprehensively manage the population.
Yeah, and there's some other departments. John said, people are not necessarily inclined to go to LSU, but I mean, I mentioned earlier that I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, you mentioned the trauma center. Most of the time, when people are in a traumatic, when they've got trauma, they're in a they're in an accident or have something. You know, they're not choosing where they go necessarily. But I mean, you have burn unit, the cleft lip and palate program that I know you're intimately involved with, transplants, the children's center.
You mentioned the St. Jude's affiliate. Right. We have a St. Jude's affiliate here. One of the oldest St. Jude affiliates. Dr. Mack started that back years ago, and he and Danny Thomas were very, very close. And Dr. Mack served on the St. Jude board for many years. His daughter currently serves on the St. Jude board along with Danny Thomas's daughter, Marlo Thomas. And so we have a very active St. Jude affiliate here. We on our Health Sciences Center, have the only Louisiana Poison Center. We have a sickle cell center. You mentioned the Children's Center for Autism, the Regional Burn Center. We also have a center that's very intimately involved in the management of patients with HIV and AIDS. So these are all important areas. That's correct.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned money. That you know, what would it take to, you know, really to turn LSU into be like you said, like, you know, some of the private hospitals. And, you know, money is always in short supply. But you know, recently, and particularly recently, you know, with the state budget shortfall and budget cuts, I understand there's been some major cuts to medical education in general and the school specifically. Can you talk a little bit about the budget cuts and how they've affected your job and the school and medical education?
Well, you know, certainly. The budget cuts, Sandy, have significantly impacted our Health Sciences Center. We're currently looking at possibly having to make some reductions in certain areas. Really, when you look at overall the budget, a majority of our budget is for personnel. I mean, these are men and women that many of them have worked for many, many years in our Health Sciences Center. Some of them are recent people that have come to work, moved to Shreveport to get a job and to contribute to our community and to our Health Sciences Center. So it's a very difficult process of looking, going through and trying to figure out what areas we're going to try to reduce. And it's not anyone's fault. It's just a reality that we're having to deal with this budget crisis. So I wish I could give you specific details, but since I haven't discussed specific details with my individual departments yet, I really can't discuss it specifically to the public yet.
Understood. You know, it also seems like a very difficult task when you're charged with having to run a medical school and various departments, and that you're subsidized by the state, not only for education but also to hire and retain clinical faculty who, you know, or many of their patients are indigent. That you know, it's harder and harder to do without resources. So I know that you have a very difficult job.
Well, and we're hoping. Well, thank you. And we're hoping and we're praying that. Maybe the impact of the Medicaid expansion will hopefully decrease the number of uninsured patients and hopefully provide greater access to health care for the newly insured patients, and provide some revenue stream to the Health Sciences Center as well.
So let me ask you, despite these challenges that you have, what are some of your goals for the medical school? What are your and the Health Sciences Center? What would you like to see down the road that you're able to achieve?
Well, if you look at the mission of our Health Sciences Center and sort of expand on the mission of it, the mission of our Health Sciences Center is really involves three major areas. One is patient care, health, you know, care, the care of patients. Patient care is first and foremost, followed by education of the students, the residents, and the fellows that we have, and then last but not least, is research. So patient care, education, and research. If we don't have the patients to treat, then there is not going to be any, for lack of a better term, educational material to educate the students and the trainees in. And certainly, if there's not the educational material, then it's not going to bring the clever people in, the clever, smart people in, to do the research. And so my goal is to further the mission of patient care, of education, and of research. Research is an important component to our Health Sciences Center. It's had some problems in the past, and these are things that my team is addressing currently. There's some issues in the educational process, and we're working on those as well. And we've made great strides. We have a wonderful student body. We have wonderful instructors, wonderful professors, wonderful surgeons, wonderful doctors in our Health Sciences Center. The nurses, everyone is great, and we're working collaboratively as a team, and I'm very proud of the way that everyone is coming together and trying to work through some of these budget issues. And I will also tell you that I'm very, very indebted to Commissioner Darden in helping get us through some of these budget issues and helping me personally understand some of the issues that he has to deal with from a budget standpoint. And our legislative delegation, both in the Northeast and Northwest, have been very, very supportive, every single one of them. And I'm very thankful for the support that we've gotten. My goal is to make this the best medical center in Louisiana within the next 5 years, then the best medical center in the Southeast by 10 years. And then after that, who knows?
We have a caller, Crystal from Stonewall. Crystal, welcome to Health Matters.
Hi. I wanted to briefly share my story for anyone that may be questioning whether or not we need to have a program like LSU Med School and the Med Center and University Health in our area, especially with our local economy. I met Dr. Golly 5 years ago when my daughter was born premature and she was diagnosed with a cleft palate. Dr. Golly came in and was very sympathetic to us. She was in the NICU. He told us that if the worst thing that ever happened to her was her having a cleft palate, she would be a lucky little girl. She just celebrated her 5th birthday on July 22nd. She's doing great. We've had 2 surgeries with Dr. Golly's department. Dr. Golly did the first surgery. And Dr. Warner, who, Dr. Golly, you can explain how she was, I know, a resident and a fellow, and she's actually not originally from Shreveport, but she's decided to stay, and she just did Addie's second surgery a year ago, and Addie's doing great. We've been to your cleft clinic numerous times. It is a wonderful, wonderful clinic. Everything that we need is there. We've seen nutritionists, speech therapists, dentists, all in the same day. So it's been a wonderful experience, and I am so thankful, Dr. Golly, that you chose to be in Shreveport, because like this has been just wonderful to be right here in the area and know that we had one of the leading specialists in maxillofacial surgeries and his team right here at home. I mean, as a parent, it's been wonderful. So anyone that's doubting it.
Well, that's a very, very nice recommendation and comment to complimented Dr. Golly. And
thank you.
We all, you know, he has a very good reputation clinically, certainly, and is interim chancellor as well. So I know a lot of people share your opinion.
Right.
Well, thank you. And you know, Dr. Kess just handed me a note. Did you pay her off? And no, I did not pay her.
No.
I love you too, honey. Thank you so much for calling.
It's just a wonderful example of how, you know, a doctor that trained under you has stayed here and is now now that you're busy, you know, that she's taken over. And I mean, like, it never missed a beat as far as clinics and everything. It's still been a wonderful experience. We just don't get to see you and your army of people every time we go. So that's the only difference.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I love
sure.
you, too.
Thank you. And we truly, as parents, we greatly appreciate you.
Well, I love you, too. Thank you.
I thank you for your call, Crystal.
Thank you.
Love you.
Well, that was a glowing show of support. That must feel very good. But, you know, the cleft lip and palate stuff is, I know, very rewarding for you. And hopefully you still keep a hand on it, even with all the other hats that you're wearing.
It is, Sandy. And, you know, one other thing I want to say about that is we've been very lucky in Shreveport-Bossier because, you know, we have the very, 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 very first Shriners Hospital in the entire United States, built in the early 1920s. On that same site, and very, you know, world renowned for their work in orthopedic congenital or orthopedic deformities, obviously. But we started a cleft program there about 4 years ago, and it is just thriving. So now we've got patients coming from a 5-state area to Shreveport, from Texas, from Oklahoma, from Arkansas, from not just from Louisiana, from Mississippi, from Alabama, coming here. And now we're going to be the Rotary Club has helped us recently. And now we're going to be able to start an additional program, hopefully, in Mexico, where they have a Shriners affiliate. To extend services to children in the Mexico area as well.
Right. So you mentioned all these special clinical services, and I know a number of residencies were started actually in the last decade or so. I believe your own residency
right.
was started not that long ago, and there was no training for
right.
oromaxillofacial surgery
right.
prior to then in
right.
this area.
Right. Well, we started ours. Dr. Nanda started a neurosurgery one, and I hope to be able to start a radiation oncology fellowships in the future.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Training programs. I'm looking at physical medicine and rehab, two areas that we really need additional trainees in this area. And actually, you got to go a couple of states to find a good PMNR or physical medicine rehab program. And I would say, you know, you're the expert on radiation oncology.
There's no radiation oncology training program. I mean, aside from Texas and
right.
Mississippi or Arkansas, it makes it hard to recruit people to the state when there's no training program. So I think we definitely need a radiation oncology.
You know, I remember your colleague Lane Rosen when I were in the same medical school class, and he had to go off to Washington D.C. or somewhere to get trained and.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why we can't start a program like that
yep.
here in our own health science center.
So do you believe that these private public partnerships, that is the private hospitals, the Christus, the Willis-Knighton, the VA, that these increasing relationships between the faculty and these hospitals provide opportunity to improve training or maybe even expand some of these residency programs?
Oh, absolutely, Sandy. Absolutely. I mean, first of all, the residents and the trainees deserve, as part of their training, to get exposure to the physicians in the community. I mean, those that are in private practice, you know, majority of the doctors that we train are not going to stay in an academic setting. They're going to go into private practice, and they need some exposure to that. So physicians at the VA, physicians at Shriners, physicians at Christus, physicians at Willis-Knighton, at Willis-Knighton, you know, Mr. Elrod's been very, very gracious over the years. Our association at the Health Science Center, at the School of Medicine with Willis-Knighton goes back 3 decades to the transplant program that the previous Chancellor McDonald started with Mr. Elrod and has flourished over the years with the LOPA program, Louisiana Organ Procurement. And so the associations that we've had with the public hospital or the public programs with the Health Science Center and the private hospitals are wonderful. And it just doesn't extend to the small hospitals, extends to the we have a program right now, Sandy, between North Caddo and our family medicine program, for example.
What about some of the other community health program, facilities or centers, community outreach and clinics that are affiliated with the medical school? Can you say a little bit about those? I think the Martin Luther King Center, is that one?
David Raines. Martin Luther King. And again, these are important areas of outreach, particularly in the areas of pediatrics. And we have a faculty that staff some of those clinics. And hopefully, we're going to be able to grow those in the future. For sure. It's a really important part, and I believe that's where the governor, one of the first places he went to sort of announce the Medicaid rollout.
Yeah, could you say, we have a few minutes left, but could you say a little bit about the Medicaid rollout just to give some background? There was a Medicaid expansion as part of Obamacare, but under Governor Jindal, it seemed as though the Medicaid program actually contracted, that there was less money and more stringent criteria for eligibility, and that Governor Bill Edwards, that has in fact changed. It seems as though there's now an expansion now relative to under the previous administration. Can you say a little bit about that and how that's impacting healthcare and delivery in the region?
Right. Well, as I mentioned, University Health is really currently the only hospital in the region that really receives payment for uninsured patients through the UCC payments, which is, and this is, Sandy, this is complicated, and some of it is like a foreign language to me, honestly, and even as a physician. But the UCC payments are the uncompensated care compensation. Other hospitals like Christus and Wills-Knighton don't really receive payment for uninsured patients to the extent that the main university hospital does. Medicaid expansion, hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, will decrease the number of uninsured patients, provide greater access to health care for these newly insured patients so that these newly insured patients can not just go to university hospital, but they can go to any hospital they want to get their to get their care. And so I think that's the idea behind the Affordable Care Act. I think that's the idea behind the Medicaid expansion. And certainly Secretary Gee is one of the leaders advocating for the Medicaid expansion as an OB-GYN doc and as an advocate for children. She's really been very, very involved in that. So I see it as a good thing, and I see it as something that's going to help the patients first and foremost, and hopefully everyone else.
Wow. I wish we had more time. I know that there are people who wanted to get on the air and call in, and we just didn't have enough time here. It's so good having you here. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule. You're wearing three big hats, and maintaining a clinical practice. So I really appreciate you being here, and I know our listeners have as well. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, consult a physician or health professional. Views and opinions expressed on Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Henry Edwards. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for joining us this evening.